ladies and gentlemen, and fellow golfers, for your entertainment.
It's the Golf to Go Hour with Frank LaRosa, brought to you by the Hagen Oaks Golf Super Shop, America's most awarded golf facility. Naturewood Home Furnishings, where it's all about choices and always about quality.
Welcome in. This is the Golf to Go Radio Hour at Sacktown Sports 1140. I'm Frank LaRosa, along with Scott Marsh. We are packed full, Scott, so no time to talk to you or me or anything else. Our guest, Ann McGurry, host and executive producer of the award-winning Sports Interview cable series. She was one of the first women at WFAN in New York. She wrote a book called Life on the Green, Lessons and Wisdom from Legends of Golf, with a foreword by her friend Jim Nance. It's a great book. We're going to talk about some of the people in there. And then Mark Atterbury, district sales rep for Northern California for Cleveland Srixon, is going to talk to us about the new RTX 6 Zipcore wedges and explain that pesky bounce and what that actually means. All that and more coming up on this edition of the Golf to Go Radio Hour.
It's the Golf to Go Hour with Frank LaRosa on Sacktown Sports.
Welcome in. This is the Golf to Go Radio Hour. I'm Frank LaRosa, welcoming in Ann McGurry. Ann is the owner, host, and executive producer of the award-winning Sports Interview. That's Innerview, and we'll talk about that. Syndicated cable series and archive. She was the first female to host her own call-in sports talk show on WFAN in New York, the first all-sports radio station. She was also an original host of her own series on the Golf Channel. She's a trailblazer. Ann has covered 26 Masters, dozens of other major championships and tournaments, over 40 U.S. tennis championships, multiple Olympics, and a variety of other major sporting events. Winner of numerous industry awards, she's a tireless fundraiser for worthy charities. I don't know how she has time to be with us today, but welcome, Ann McGurry.
Frank, it's a pleasure to be on the show. I started when I was 12. That's when you said 40 U.S. Opens. I started very young.
You know, that's the only way any of us can do any of this. You know, your name has been familiar to me over the years as a sports fan. You know, as we mentioned a little bit before we got recording here, your interviews of Ted Williams and Mickey Mantle and Wilt Chamberlain, a lot of the people that I grew up with, was always very exciting to me. So at some point in this interview, I'd like to talk about that as well. But you have written a book, and it looks like it's going to be a very successful book, called Life on the Green, Lessons and Wisdom from Legends of Golf. There's a mouthful, but boy, that encompasses some great personalities and a wonderful foreword by your friend Jim Nance. And it's got to make you feel good that it's ready to go.
I am so excited about this book. I'm holding it in my hand right now, Frank. And, you know, it took me 3 years to write the book. I had to interview all the legends in the book. I chose 12 legends, 6 men, 6 women. But even before that, getting the publishing deal, that's, you know, quite the ordeal. And now, you know, and then you edit it, of course, and now promoting it. So it's really been a project. And I'm very excited with the way it turned out. I feel it's very uplifting and positive, and in these divisive times in our society and in our sport, golf, unfortunately, you know, it's just been, there's been a lot of turmoil, and I wanted to write something very positive and very uplifting. And I think I achieved it. I asked these legends in golf to share life wisdom, what they learned from their iconic golf careers that they use in their day-to-day life. And oh boy, the wisdom applies to everyone, whether you're a golfer or not. And, you know, they're universal themes. And I'm just so delighted that legends such as Jack Nicklaus and Gary Player and Ben Crenshaw and Tom Watson and Padraig Harrington, Nancy Lopez, Jan Stevenson, Dottie Pepper shared their success stories with me and with the world, and shared their life wisdom.
You know, as I kind of leaf through some of the things, I haven't had a chance to read the whole book yet, but I looked at a PDF of the book. There's, you know, when you mention the names, I mean, I even knew who was in the book because I obviously had seen the press release. But as you mention the names and they roll off your tongue, that's an impressive list of people who have been very successful, not only in their careers, but in their lives as well. And as you mentioned, some of this advice is life lessons as well. And that's one of the things that was I found most interesting.
Well, people ask me, why did I choose these particular 12 legends? They all are Hall of Famers in various Hall of Fames. Padre Carrington is, I believe, the youngest personality in the book. And, you know, he's getting inducted into the Hall of Fame, the Golf Hall of Fame this year. So I'm thrilled about that. In fact, I just saw him at the Cognizant Classic here in the Palm Beaches and was so thrilled that I could actually hand him the book instead of sending it to Ireland, right, where he is based, obviously. But yeah, they're all just iconic figures. They're older and they, you know, can look back on their careers. Padraig's still playing. And so is Bernard Langer, 66 years young. And, you know, I just really chose personalities who are A, Hall of Famers, B, are positive role models, and had a lot to talk about from their legendary golf careers and life wisdom.
And the book certainly opens on a really high note with your friend, Mr. Jim Nantz. I thought his foreword was written from the heart, and it certainly spoke a lot about who you are and your career and the effort that you put into to write this book.
I am so grateful to Jim. Just extraordinary. You know, I've known him for decades. I started my career as a production assistant, a freelance production assistant at that at CBS Sports. I think I was even there before Jim Nantz started working for CBS. But I've known him through the years covering the NFL and covering golf. And he's become just a wonderful friend. And boy, how gracious of him to write such a wonderful foreword. I can't believe it. He's just such a nice man, as you know. He's just such a great role model. And yeah, I have sent him the book. So I can't wait to hear what he thinks.
You know, as I in the introduction, I mentioned the title of your program, Sports Interviews, and that's spelled INNERVIEWS. And I was always intrigued with that because when you take that word apart, obviously an interview is asking questions, and your kind of twist on the word is kind of looking inside folks. And hats off, that was really well done.
Thank you. Well, first of all, you know, it is an interview. I'm so interested in getting to know the personality and making he or she as comfortable as possible so that they tell me perhaps more than they would somebody else. Maybe you learn a little bit more that you've not read or heard before about the personality. And then I really worked hard to get legendary people on that show, Sports Interview, Frank. You know, I my first show was back in 1989, the great Mickey Mantle. I was younger, I was in my 20s and 30s and going, you know, I was looking to book guests on the show who you were just icons in all different sports. Mickey Mantle was my first guest. Ted William, that was just an incredible experience for me to actually get the interview with Ted Williams. And then he's such a baseball genius. He opened up so much about the game. And that's a whole story. Each one of these interviews, whether it's Will Chamberlain or Billie Jean King or Annika or Hank Aaron or Bart Starr, there's stories behind the stories. So perhaps that would be my next book.
Well, you know, not only to have an interview with Ted Williams, but he didn't talk to very many people. So
itself. Well, you know, let me tell you a quick story about that. I was playing golf at a great golf course in Central Florida called Black Diamond. And I had heard that the Ted Williams Museum was nearby and that John Henry lived nearby. And I was so determined to get an interview with Ted Williams, and my friend knew where John Henry lived. So I actually, after the round of golf, went to John Henry's house, knocked on the door, introduced myself to his wife, and told him all about my show, Sports Interview, and asked if he wasn't home at the time, but I asked his wife if I left my business card with her, and I asked her if she would have John Henry call me, the son. And sure enough, 2 days later, he called, and I asked if I could possibly sit down with his dad. And he said, are you around, you know, during the All-Star game in July when they went to Fenway? Remember that in the late 90s? Oh, yeah. And I said, absolutely. He said, if you get your camera crew here at 11 a.m. at whatever hotel they were staying at in Boston, Four Seasons on the Square, and be ready to go. Ted will have just awoken from his nap. He was ailing back then. You know, he was up there and not feeling, not well. John Henry was really reunited with his father and was taking care of him. But John Henry was so gracious. He said, if you meet me and are prepared with the crew at 11 a.m., he'll come up, he'll be sharp, he'll have just awoken from his nap, and he'll be ready to go. And that's exactly what happened. And we're all set to go, the lights and camera and everything, we're ready. And here comes Ted Williams, you know, this intimidating presence, Ted Williams. And, you know, he was a baseball genius, so it was just an honor to talk to him and to listen to him.
And that was, as you alluded to a moment ago, early in your career. Where did this all come from? I know sports was very important in your family as you were growing up, and you kind of played a few as well. But, you know, how did this all kind of come together for you?
I've always been an athlete growing up, Frank, and I know I wanted to be a talk show host when I was 3 years old. I don't know how many people know they want to be a talk show host at three, but I was in Cincinnati where I was born, and I was raised in a little town called Brecksville, Ohio, outside of Cleveland. But when I was still in Cincinnati, my earliest recollection is being in a high chair looking at a woman named Ruth Lyons, a true pioneer in the talk show genre on television. And she was interviewing the most fascinating personalities who came through Cincinnati. And that had such a profound effect on me, obviously. I remember it to this day. And I've always thought that that would be a cool thing, to interview different personalities. So as an athlete growing up, I knew I would eventually marry my broadcasting career with my sports knowledge and my sports background. Not easy in the day for women in sports broadcasting back when I started right out of college in the early 80s, but I've always been very athletic and I've always loved sports. So thankfully I was able to marry the two.
Well, and being one of the first, you know, especially in New York, you know, and what the world was like, and certainly broadcast as well, that maybe they're more intimidated with you than you were with them, huh?
I don't think that was the case. All I can say is it was very near impossible to break into the field as a woman back then. It was very closed to women in sports broadcasting. And I'm just happy that I was able to break in and establish credibility early in my career. And, you know, I really worked hard to do as much research and as much prep work as I could. I really felt I really needed to prove myself more than the guys back then, because there weren't really women doing that kind of work. So, you know, there were ups and downs and lots of fun stories to tell, but, you know, I'm grateful that it all worked out.
So you thought, well, you know, I suppose I could interview, you know, some guy that works in the, you know, in travel for some baseball team, but you decided Mickey Mantle would be your first interview.
Exactly. I went for it, Frank. Actually, you know, I just knew that I brought in the sponsors for this show as well, Sports Interview. At the time, MSG Network, who I pitched the show to, they had known of my work. They said, yes, we love your work. We can give you the airtime every week, but we can't pay you. So I was in my mid-20s. I had to figure out how to make my dream come true, how to make, you know, this show turn into a reality. So I ended up pitching it to sponsors and advertisers. And I booked my own guests. And in order to have a successful show in New York, and eventually I syndicated it nationally, I had to get A-list stars. So back in the, you know, I networked a lot and went to a lot of sports functions, and Mickey Mantle's restaurant was right in Midtown Manhattan on Central Park South. And I was able to get to know Mickey and the people that handled his career, and they were gracious enough to get him to do my very first interview for the TV show. And it's a classic, I must say. He was a great storyteller.
He was indeed, and what an incredible ball player, and you know, gone too soon, like so many. That had to be both satisfying and a little scary for you to start this career with a guy like Mickey Mantle, an icon, especially in New York. What do you remember from that interview?
I remember we did it way before happy hour. They made sure of that. You know, he was always very good to me, very, very nice to me. And I did a lot of homework because obviously I wasn't around to, he played way before I started watching baseball, and I wanted to really know everything I could about his legendary career. And so I think he was impressed with my questions and the homework I did, my preparation. And he really was sentimental in that interview, Frank, because I brought up the fact that you know, he lost his dad to Hodgkin's disease, and his son at the time was suffering with Hodgkin's disease. And when he started talking about all of that, he got very sentimental, almost teary-eyed, and talked about the people that he lost to that disease. And his son eventually passed from it after, you know, years after we had that interview. So he was just a great storyteller. And a lot of people thought that he and Roger Maris were intense rivals because they were going after the same records. But he and Roger were best of friends. In fact, he pulled out a baseball from the wall in the restaurant and read it to me. And it said, "To Mick, my best friend, love Rog." He said he went to visit him every day in the hospital and just adored each other. So they were best friends, even though they were pretty much competing for the same records on the same team.
You know, and I could ask questions forever about your early career, but we want to talk about this book, which is really exciting. Again, it's Life on the Green: Lessons and Wisdom from the Legends of Golf. When did you decide this is a book that needs to be written, and I'm the one that's going to do it?
Well, I honestly wanted to write a book about all those sports legends I just told you about. All, you know, the baseball legends and the basketball legends, and include the golf legends that I interviewed. And the publisher said, you know, "We love your work in golf. Would you consider doing a golf book?" And I said, "Absolutely." And so it was a kind of a change of plans. But once I got into it and decided the 12 personalities that I would interview and did those interviews, I mean, I obviously know all of them through years and years of covering golf for WFAN in New York. I'll be covering my 26th Masters coming up in April. But I just decided, let's do a golf book and let's make it positive. And happily, I think it is. I think, you know, these life wisdoms, Jack Nicklaus talks about integrity and family first. He's such a great family man, and had the opportunity to sit next to Barbara Nicklaus at the Cognizant Classic last week. I was the keynote speaker to 250 women in this women's leadership forum, and Barbara was there, and we celebrated her birthday that day. And, you know, they're just so philanthropic and such a pleasure to know. And so everybody in the book has so many great stories, Frank. If you're a diehard golfer, you're going to learn some new material on all these people. And if you don't like golf, you're going to cherish the stories, I feel, and perhaps take some of their wisdom with you on a day-to-day basis. So I just really got into it, and I'm so proud that I actually did this book. Hopefully I'll be able to do the third book one day and talk about the stories behind the sports interview show.
Yeah, I noticed a comment from Jack, since you mentioned his name, something about when in his humility, he said something to the effect that I realized I got famous for making a couple of 4-foot putts or something like that.
Exactly.
Remarkable.
Because, you know, Jack really prioritized his family and still does. He has 5 children, 22 grandchildren, 3 great grandchildren, and golf is important to him, but it's not as integral as his family. He said golf has given him the lifestyle that he enjoys today, obviously, because he was able to make a couple 4-foot putts, but he really believes that being a father comes ahead of chasing trophies. So that's the kind of person Jack Nicklaus is, and Barbara. They're just a pleasure to know. They're so charitable, and he really values his family more than anything.
You know, we had a chance to interview him a couple of years back. We honored him at an event out here at Pebble Beach. But at the time, he said, "I'm not playing much golf now. I play a little more tennis." But for a man that's, you know, considered the greatest golfer ever, to let that casually roll off his lips and then in the next breath talk about his family, it you know, you're absolutely right. That's that's where his focus is, and that's where his love is.
Well, many years during the prime of his career, he'd be leading a tournament in the third round, leave the tournament, no matter where he was, fly to Florida to make a son's football game, then fly back to the tournament and, you know, the next morning and finish the final round. I mean, you know, it's hard to do that, but he was able to make time for his family. And to him, that's his greatest legacy, his family, not the many countless trophies that he has in his office and in his house.
You write about Jan Stevenson, and you talk about somebody that helped to put the LPGA on the map, but that was tough for her to be what was considered by some, you know, to be too sexy for the sport of golf, and for her to kind of go through what she went through to, in fact, you know, make the LPGA a household word at that point. Was remarkable, her story as well.
Sure. Jan Stevenson came to this country from Australia as a beautiful, blonde-haired, blue-eyed golfer with a lot of talent. And the LPGA used her to promote the tour. She pretty much became the sex symbol of the LPGA, the face of the LPGA. You remember the poster of her in the bathtub full of Max Fly golf balls.
Yeah.
And it was quite controversial back then. And much to the dismay of her colleagues on the LPGA tour. So, you know, she had admitted to me, she said, boy, if I had done less of that promotional work for the LPGA tour, I could have won more titles. And she didn't think she was going to get into the Hall of Fame because she irritated a lot of people in the golf business by doing that. She thought she was doing the right thing and saying yes to the LPGA tour commissioner and promoting the tour. Thankfully she did get into the Hall of Fame. It took her a while. She didn't get into the Hall of Fame until 2019. But she has a great story. She really does. You know, she's had a life full of ups and downs. She got mugged in a parking lot in Miami, and it permanently damaged her hand. And so even to this day, she doesn't have feeling in three of her fingers. I had the opportunity to play with her a couple of weeks ago in Tampa at a celebrity tournament. And, you know, you can tell she still doesn't have the feeling in her left hand. But I'm sure there'll be a movie done about her one day because her life is perfect for that. She has so many great stories to tell, and she's a joy to know.
More with Anne Liguori right after these messages.
It's the Golf to Go Hour with Frank LaRosa on Sactown Sports.
Tom Watson is one of the folks in your book.
Tom's chapter is called Learn from the Best, Stay Humble, and Stay in the Present. And I think that's really great advice. And you know, he learned from talking about the best. He learned from Arnold Palmer. He learned from Jack Nicklaus, who became his rival. And he learned from the great Byron Nelson. And he goes into the stories of how he learned and what he learned from each one of those greats. So I love that chapter on Tom Watson.
I suppose if you're going to have some idols, those three are pretty good, huh?
Absolutely. That's smart. A very wise person will learn from the best. I love that advice.
Yeah, absolutely. Nancy Lopez, who's always been a favorite of so many. I love the way she talks about playing happy golf, and that's transferred into her life as well.
Yes, I love Nancy Lopez. She's very positive. Her message is just that. Stay positive on the course and stay positive off the course. And that is very, very difficult to do. You know, as a golfer, that it's easy to get frustrated. It's the hardest sport on the planet. How can hitting a stationary ball be the hardest sport on the planet? Well, just ask Michael Jordan, just ask Wayne Gretzky, just ask Tom Brady, right? It is so frustrating. You have to stay positive on the golf course and in life as well. We all have our ups and downs, and I just love her advice. If you can somehow just remain positive, play happy golf on and off the course, that is just advice that I treasure and try to emulate.
There was one thing that caught my eye. Amy Alcott, as a youngster, used to sneak on to Riviera Country Club and play with putt with Rita Hayworth.
And didn't even know it was Rita Hayworth. Her mother had to point her out. I mean, you know, Amy was tunnel vision. She'd sneak onto the course and, you know, play with the guys, and she'd stay on the putting green through, you know, on all, through all hours until it got dark, and her mother would come and pick her up. And her mother finally said, "Come on, Amy, let's go," and walk down to the practice green. And there is Rita Hayworth putting right next to her daughter, Amy. And she said, "Do you know who that is, Amy? That is Miss Rita Hayworth." And I just thought it was funny because Amy had no idea. A lot of celebrities at those courses that she probably played with and didn't know when she was young.
You know, it's interesting. When you mentioned that, you know, that you had an equal number of men and women, I was surprised because as I was going through the names, they didn't jump out that way. But as we talk about it, it's the women's stories that I find most fascinating.
Well, thank you. Well, you know, they were all very open and very honest. Renee Powell, I don't know if you know Renee's story. She's the second female Black LPGA player after Althea Gibson. Mm-hmm. Althea Gibson, the tennis legend, was the first Black female to play in the LPGA. But Renee, her father built a golf course in Ohio with his bare hands, basically. He didn't want there to be any racial discrimination or gender discrimination. And Renee describes in detail what she went through as a child in, and you know, it's unbelievable what obstacles she overcame, but what a success story she has written for herself. She is now, you know, she's an honorary member of the RNA, and St. Andrews University even named a dormitory after her. Wow. And she's in so many different Hall of Fames. She's just a pleasure to know. And boy, when you think you've had a tough day, you have to read her chapter and to see what she went through, what she had to overcome.
You talk about Gary Player, and there's certainly a personality that, you know, was an incredible player and one of the big three. And even today, he's going to let you know how many tournaments he's won and you know, why it should be looked at it differently, because he's won just as many. He's just a really interesting guy.
He is an international treasure, Gary Player. And I love having him on the show because he's brutally honest. He will tell you what he thinks no matter what. And that makes for a good interview, especially on my Talking Golf show on WFAN on Sunday mornings. So yeah, Gary has traveled the world, probably won more international tournaments, I know he has, than anybody in the history of the game. And he's experienced life in so many different countries and has so much to talk about, you know, what it's like on the opposite end of the world. He was very involved in bringing Lee Elder to South Africa for the very first time. And that was a real controversial move back in the day. So he goes into all of that in his chapter. And, you know, he's 88 years young and so passionate about what he does. And his chapter is pursue your passion. And that's the greatest advice. And, you know, from somebody who is so physically fit, he is, you know, he eats well. I know because a couple of years ago, I did a TV show interview with him and I was doing sit-ups and push-ups in his driveway with him. So to this day, he continues to play golf every day and he continues to work out every day. He's just an inspiration.
And the list goes on and on. You've got Dottie Pepper. You've got Patrick Harrington, as you said, and Annika Sorenstam, certainly, and Ben Crenshaw. And, you know, I mean, it's just a great read. And I look forward to actually being able to sit down with it. One of the things that jumped out is the life wisdom part that you talked about. And there's some quotes in there that I found fascinating. One of them was, "Always play like you're a shot behind." What a great way to look at playing your game. That you know, as good as you think it is, you might want to step it up a little bit.
Absolutely, that is a great piece of advice from Padraig Harrington. And Padraig's psychology is: if he's three shots ahead heading into the final round, he has to tell himself mentally that he's behind, or he won't close out the win. Everybody has their own way of winning an event or trying to win an event, right? But I just thought that revelation was amazing. And even beyond that, I just think he told me that he plays in fear, not just nerves, that he is in fear every time he goes to the tee box. Now, here's a guy who's won three major titles and all those victories and is continuing to play. And he is in fear when he goes to the tee. And so his message is embrace fear and nerves and make it work for you. He said it gives him adrenaline to focus more. So Padraig's an interesting guy. I just love talking to him.
And there's, you know, the advice that we've heard before and probably hard to take, you know, learn how to handle winning, but more so learn how to navigate losing, because that's where you learn, right?
Yeah, most people will tell you that they learn more from losing than they do winning. So that's universal advice. And, you know, all these personalities came up with different themes that I focused on when I didn't have to coach them on saying something different than the other person. But then there are some of these universal themes, like learning how to lose. I mean, you know, obviously there's one winner in golf and you're only as good as your last shot, right? So all these personalities are very humble and stay very grounded because they know they're only as good as their last shot. Again, the advice is universal for all of us.
Speaking of advice, Anne, what's the best piece of advice you ever got?
Wow, that's a good question. Normally they ask me, I'm asked, what advice do I have for young people getting into the field? The best piece of advice I ever got. I just think I learned by example. My parents were my heroes. And, you know, they came from humble backgrounds. My grandparents on my mom's side were German immigrants. My grandparents on my dad's side were from Italy. And we just worked really hard. I think work ethic is the key. My mother and father worked so hard and they enjoyed what they did. They were both college professors and they were both very interested in sports and they were both athletes. But I just think work ethic, I think there's no shortcuts. And I learned by example by watching my parents, and they encouraged us to pursue our passion. I think that's very important. As Gary Player says in his chapter, pursue your passion. You're going to work 24/7 anyway, doing something. You might as well do something you love to do, right? And they instilled that in our childhood and made it possible for us to pursue our passions. And in my case, it was sports and being an athlete and becoming a broadcaster. And I thank my parents for instilling those lessons and giving me such great advice growing up.
And as we started here at the beginning, we are here to talk about this incredible book that you've written, Life on the Green, Lessons and Wisdom from the Legends of Golf. And I'm sure that your parents would be very proud of that as well.
Thank you, Frank. I did dedicate the book to my parents and to my brother, who is a year older than me. And they're looking down from the skies, hopefully, and are very proud. And I'm just very proud of the book. And hopefully it will inspire everyone who reads it.
How do we get a copy, Anne? Where do we go to get our copies?
So you can order, anybody can order the copy. It's actually out for the public April 2nd. So it's not even out yet, but you can advance order it. It's published by Haverly Press and distributed by Penguin and Random House. And you can get it from Amazon. You can get it from Barnes and Noble. So you can order it online. And I'll certainly make sure the publishers send you a copy so that you don't have to read it online, Frank.
I appreciate it.
But you're ahead of the curve. And, you know, the book doesn't even really, it's not really available until April 2nd. But I'm so delighted that you at least got to read the online version.
Anne Liguori, Wonder Woman, we could probably call you that with everything you've got going on in your life. What a pleasure. Thanks so much for spending some time with us here today.
I really am just honored that you had me on your show, Frank. Thanks so much. And I'll make sure you get a hard copy so you can enjoy the book
I
and
look
read
forward
it
to
in
it.
Your hands.
Wish
of
you
on
continued
the computer.
Success and hope our paths cross someday.
Hope so too. Hit them straight.
That's Anne Liguori, author of Life on the Green, Lessons and Wisdom from Legends of Golf. We'll be back with more on the Golf to Go Radio Hour with Mark Atterbury from Cleveland Golf right after this.
It's the Golf to Go Hour with Frank LaRosa on Sactown Sports.
Welcome in, listeners. This is the Golf to Go Radio Hour on Sactown Sports 1140. Hi, I'm Frank LaRosa. It's always fun when you talk to someone that's going to teach you something and also turns out to be a friend. That's an interesting relationship. Mark Atterbury is the district sales rep for Northern California for the Cleveland and Srixon golf brands. Mark, how are you today?
I'm wonderful. Thank you so much for having me on, Frank.
Absolutely. You're kind of running around a little bit. This is kind of get your wares out and take them to the folks and let them know what you got all around Northern California, huh?
Yeah, never any rest. I mean, of course, we love what we do, but just to make sure that all the golf shops throughout Northern California, Northern Nevada have their merchandise. I get to spend a few hours every week behind my steering wheel. So I'm up in Reno today for a trade show that we've got.
Give us kind of the scope of your area, Mark, and how many miles you put on every year.
Yeah, I probably trimmed it down a little bit to about 25,000, maybe 30,000 on the high end on an annual basis for driving between Redding on the north end, just shy of Bakersfield on the south, Napa in the west, and I go all the way out to Winnemucca and Elko, Nevada to the east.
Wow. You're a busy man.
They keep me busy, yeah.
Yeah. You know, one of the things I like to talk to you about with the Cleveland brand certainly is the wedges. Your company's been known for the quality of the wedges, and they're played by many of the noted players for years. And how the golf club manufacturers continue to make them better, and you know, and what better actually means, I suppose, is up for discussion. But you are now on the sixth version of the RTX. Zipcore wedges, and when I think about that, it makes me feel old. I remember when they first came out.
You're only as old as you feel, Frank. Yeah, Cleveland's been on the wedge game a long time. The RTX technology coming out, like you said, they're on the sixth generation. There's also the term Zipcore, which unfortunately it's not visible when it's sitting on a display within a store, but it's a hollow portion of metal within the club. What we're doing is reducing the amount of weight associated with the hosel of the club, where the shaft goes into the club head, so that we can manipulate the center of gravity and get it squarely where you want it, right behind the center of the club face, right where the ball should be striking. And just to make that wedge more playable, you know, rather than just being largely kind of, I would say, draw biased or left biased, but you know, you don't want to hit the ball on the hosel either. And that used to be where the sweet spot on many clubs was right next to the hosel.
You know, you bring up an interesting point, because I noticed playing yesterday a couple of times, I found my shorter irons digging in the heel. And so I began to wonder, gee, is it the lie that's different? Have I changed the way I address the ball? Is it the way I'm swinging? But that's certainly very important. I mean, you don't want to be digging him with the heel.
I think it's just your immense amount of strength being able to move that much earth. So no, but in all seriousness, yes. I mean, we're currently recording this during, you know, the winter time, and yeah, the turf is wet. The clubs will absolutely dig more, obviously, if the turf is wet and soft. But the manufacturers know that, and they take that into consideration, particularly on wedges where you're often striking downward into the ball in order to impart a good amount of backspin. And there's a concept called bounce. And what bounce is relative to perpendicular to the shaft, the sole of the club is not actually flat. It's actually got a tilt to it so that the trailing edge is coming into contact with the turf prior to the leading edge digging in. And that effectively, that angle is what's called bounce. And then you've got different factors in there. The width of the sole, the curvature of the sole. I mean, the manufacturer will put different grind sole where they can increase or decrease the bounce, increase or decrease the trailing edge. They'll even do certain things where they're, you know, taking a little bit of bounce, maybe just off the heel of the club, for somebody that likes to lay that wedge open with regularity. So there's a lot that they can do outside of the face of a club to help that club perform very well in varying turf conditions, varying weather conditions. You know, hopefully we have a 12-month season around Sacramento, but it's not always perfect weather.
You know, Mark, you may have just struck the best description of bounce I've ever heard. I mean, I've always suggested to folks that describing what bounce is really kind of somewhat difficult. We recognize what loft is in terms of, you know, how the angle of the club to the ground, but when you mentioned that the trailing edge hits the ground before the leading edge, that's the first time it actually painted a mental picture for me. So go over that one more time and again, talk about how important that is.
Yeah, sure. So if the face of the club is, you know, typically 2 to 3 inches tall from the bottom of the club face up to the top of the very end of the club or the toe of the club, the club face, the sole itself is usually, you know, on a very narrow side, maybe a half inch would be really small, but probably 3/4 of an inch wide. I think the majority of wedges are probably closer now to maybe a full inch in width on the sole. But that trailing edge is, or the sole, I should say, is angled so that the trailing edge of the sole is contacting the turf before the leading edge does. And that's just to keep that club kind of gliding and keep, you know, smooth so that it's not digging too much turf. Cause that's where you really get into the, you know, you're digging up pelts of land and just sending divots flying all over the place. And oftentimes you might even get into that turf and get that divot before you've made contact with the ball. So you're not going to impart spin or energy into the ball if that's the case. And that's where the bounce angle or the sole angle, the geometry really comes into play to keep you from digging too much. And it actually helps that club just keep its speed through the turf and get proper, you know, characteristics onto the golf ball with backspin and speed.
Obviously very important. And there are varying degrees of bounce for the different types of swings as well.
Yeah, immensely. A lot of manufacturers, I work for Cleveland Golf. We make wedges with varying bounces per each loft. Just for, you know, if we were, hey, Frank, let's go to Scotland. Just you and I, we'll live there for a month. But the turf there is known to be very firm. And for that reason, a lot of golfers will play a wedge with a low bounce angle, meaning that the trailing edge is not really sticking too much further down than the leading edge. So it's easier to get under the ball in those turf conditions that are really firm. You know, around most of Northern California and most of America, we're playing in pretty lush turf. You got, you know, you don't need something that's going to dig intentionally because we can do that with the soft turf all day, every day.
Scott, that's got to be good news for you to know that, you know, what I'm translating from what Mark is saying, and maybe falsely, but boy, from the fairway, you hit your wedges so high and so soft. And as you get around the green, you know, if you have a bad shot, it's probably because of digging. And I wonder, Mark, does that have anything to do with bounce?
Absolutely, yeah. In fact, that's why the wedges are the clubs that we really focus the bounce on the most. Oftentimes for those kind of shorter swings for a pitch or a chip shot, you're not going to have the momentum with that shorter swing to really get through the turf anyhow. So the bounce angle actually comes in very importantly to make sure that you're not digging too much or, you know, not getting underneath it enough as well. So you can really kind of slam that club down into the ground if you want, and it's not going to dig too much.
Scott, I've just solved your problem.
Well, it sounds like I need a pair of Cleveland wedges. That's the issue right there.
I might know a guy.
I feel like I just earned 4 credits towards my PGA credential with this conversation here today.
Well, I'm glad I helped with the education process for you.
So you actually make wedges for every type of golfer too. Obviously, your RTX is you know, for the better player. You have a CBX4, which has more of a cavity back. And then we talked a little bit about the Smart Sole, which is an even wider wedge. Kind of run through the different variations there.
Yeah, so the RTX would be our tour wedge. It's what you see all of the Cleveland and Srixon tour pros playing as far as a wedge in their bag. And many amateurs will play that wedge as well. But that's not to say that it's an end-all be-all. I mean, there are plenty of us, myself included, who are going to miss the center of the face with regularity, and not many of us play a blade iron. Most golfers anymore play a cavity back, and we make the same thing in the wedges. So the CBX4 is the latest rendition of the Cleveland cavity back wedge. CBX4 Zipcore is the official name. And that's a cavity back wedge, comes with a little bit lighter steel shaft, as most of us don't play super heavy steel shafts. There are also ladies graphite options, men's graphite options, which it's a great fill in for a set where, you know, many of the sets anymore come with whatever your longest iron is down to a pitching wedge, of course, and then often a gap wedge included. You know, they don't necessarily always make a matching sand or a lob wedge, and that's where the Cleveland CBX comes in to fill those gaps. just to complete you all the way down through to where you get that really high lofted lob shot. But you still have a nice forgiving cavity wedge in case you're not a perfect ball striker. And speaking of less than perfect ball striking, we make one wedge further, which you referenced as the Smart Sole. And that is a club that has an extremely wide sole on the bottom of it, just to keep us from overly digging in particular. I mean, it's so wide that it actually is quite a struggle to dig too much. And that's for not even the everyday golfer necessarily, but the weekend warrior that is out there just wanting some help with their wedges. The Smart Sole is the easiest one for us to get up in the air. We make a chipper in that line. So you've got a real wide-soled club kind of doubling as like your 8 or 9 iron hitting those bump and run shots. And then we've got a gap sand and a lob wedge. And I think that the Smart Sole really, I mean, we do sell them individually, but that's almost like you buy them as a set between the sand and the lob wedge. And if you want the chipper, you want the gap wedge, that's great. But yeah, just buying them together, the sand and lob together, makes a ton of sense.
You mentioned steel shafts, which is primarily what comes with wedges. What do you say to a player that's been, you know, the rest of their clubs are graphite? I mean, what do you say to them? You know, steel is going to be fine, or we can put a graphite shaft in that, or?
I think it does end up being up to the individual. I'm a big fan, though, of matching weights kind of all the way through the club set. So if you've got a, you know, 55, 65, 75 grams graphite shaft in your irons, I normally, as a fitter, wouldn't want to put you into a 120-gram steel shaft. I mean, it's just a lot more mass in a wedge. But that's not to say that it doesn't work for individuals either. But I'm just a big fan of trying to get the weight similar. So that's where the graphite shafts and the wedges come in fantastic. I mean, there's a lot of golfers playing graphite anymore. I mean, it's definitely become more and more commonplace. Particularly, I mean, let's face it, not every golfer is 25 years old either, right? There's plenty of us that are getting on in years, and having a little graphite with the lighter weight, more shock absorption, that can improve the feel of a club and the longevity just on your body. Even to the extent too, you know, here we are February, it's a little bit cold out, and you might get some kind of stinging sensations coming up a steel shaft. So graphite is fantastic for taking care of that issue.
Scott, did you get the impression he was talking about us?
Well, I have to admit, I'm stubborn. I won't play anything but steel shafts. So I have to be a little bit more convinced myself.
There you go. Hey, that's no issue. I'm not an old man or a young man. At 45, I've got graphite all the way through. And I don't
know. And that's why you've got the game you have, and I have the game I have.
Mark, yeah, you also rep Srixon, and you've got some incredible new product there, including the driver, which has won another Golf Digest Gold Award. And I want to have you back to talk about that. But just talk briefly, I mean, very briefly, about the woods and irons lines for Cleveland. And then we'll have you back to talk about that as well.
Yeah. So just briefly on the Cleveland side, the metal woods and the irons are largely for kind of that avid to improving golfer. So between Cleveland and Srixon is what you're going to see on the tour for the most part, and Cleveland is for us weekend warriors that just want to go out and have a good time. They're typically a more forgiving, lighter weight, just trying to hit the ball, you know, up in the air and keep it flying straight and just enjoy our weekends, right? Not around chasing $1,000,000 paychecks on the PGA tour.
I understand.
I wish I could, but I know I don't have that skill.
Well, you know what? Maybe we should be playing. We'll have to set up a game.
Let's go.
You, me, and Scott. Me with my graphite shaft, and Scott with his steel shaft, and we'll see what you have to say at the end of the round. How's that?
Perfect.
Mark Atterbury is the district sales rep for Northern California, and as far as Winnemucca, Nevada, for Cleveland and Srixon. And Mark, it's always a pleasure, and good success up in Reno with your trunk show, and we look forward to we get you back here in the Valley.
Yeah, thank you guys so much for having me on. I always appreciate my time with you.
That wraps up another edition of the Golf to Go Radio Hour on Sactown Sports 1140. Thanks for being with us. Keep it in the fairway.